So we turn to agenda paper 29, and we start with paper 29A, which discusses the tricky issue of liabilities with equity settlement features. As paper 29A reports, we found that there is diversity in practice for these instruments, and that's because at present the IAS1 requirements aren't clear. However, there's only a limited range of things that the board could do within the scope of this project to help reduce the diversity, and that's because the scope of the project is to clarify the existing IAS1 requirements, not to fundamentally review the principles for classification as current or non-current. The option the staff recommend is in paragraphs 37 and 38 of the paper. And we recommend clarifying the scope of a statement in IAS1 that counterparty conversion options do not affect classification of a liability as current or non-current. And we recommend clarifying that this statement applies only to counterparty conversion options that are recognised separately as equity instruments. So it doesn't apply to any other obligations to transfer the entity's own equity instrument. And the question for you after paragraph 38 is, do you agree with this staff recommendation?
Tom?
Yeah, I'm okay with where you end up. I'm not okay with Principle A. It seems to me that Principle A, shares and own equity are neither cash nor an economic resource. I would not want this explanation to go out there. It seems to me to be directly in conflict with the conceptual framework. I'd be much happier with a different explanation to get to the same solution.
Okay. What explanation?
I don't have another. Like, you looked at B.
Yeah.
B was out. When you did B, it seemed that B would get you there for this issue, but might bring some unintended consequences. So given that, I would probably suggest somehow tailoring B, since it gets you where you want to go on the prime issue, to tidy up the unintended consequences somehow. Or you could simply put out just a flat assertion, but rather than try and I think A twists the number of things together, which I don't like. So I would rather you just went to a simple kind of like 32 did. 32 basically asserts some things because it was trying to work around what was in the conceptual framework. And then we created the whole FICE project to deal with this issue. I don't think we should be trying to write something in this exercise that all it's doing is splitting current from non-current liabilities. We should enter into those murky waters. I mean, they're pretty murky. And I just don't think we should put out something that could be used elsewhere to justify things we don't want justified.
I think Principle B is really dangerous because it would have quite far-reaching knock-on consequences, requiring changes or at least questions about practice for a much wider range of instruments. We could put in something along the lines of that. What the staff recommendation will be clarifying was what we think the board intended in the first place when it put it in, and not say much more than that we're just clarifying the intention at the time that wasn't sufficiently clearly worded to meet its objectives.
That did occur to me, that just less is more.
Yeah.
If you can get away with simply saying this is what the board intended, with a minimum of explanation that takes you into the whole FICE world,
right,
I think that's a good thing.
That's fine. I just to clarify, not to disagree with you in any way, but to clarify that in the staff paper we're talking about treating them as transfers of outflows of economic resources. It's not that we'd be saying that conceptually they are outflows of economic resources, just that whatever reasoning caused the board to decide to classify these things as if they were liabilities, the same reasoning would cause them to treat the transfer that results from that as if it were an outflow of economic resources. But we don't have to say that if the board doesn't want to say that, because I think we could just say we are clarifying what I'm pretty sure the board intended in the first place.
Where's the statement that Tom's referring to that's giving him problems? What paragraph?
25.
Paragraph 25.
Okay. 25B.
25.
Okay. Well, A and B together. Well, actually, A, B, and yeah, A and B.
I just want to check that was it, so.
I agree with the recommendation. I think this is the most practical way forward. It's a bit ironic that we're left trying to deal with this when it wasn't really the focus of the narrow scope project we started off with. I'd be very happy, as Tom suggests, to sort of say less rather than more and to make it very much a clarification. And the reason why is that I think that, for me, what I'm very happy, and I think we should finalise it based on the staff recommendation, but just to make another observation. I think what this highlights is that we've got no really strong rationale in IAS 1 for when we think about equity settlement and where we don't for this current non-current classification. And it seems to me that maybe we should be thinking about tidying this up when we get further down the line with FICE, because it could be a good opportunity when we're thinking about what's a liability and what's an equity to then try and tidy up some of the interaction between what happens in the actual debt equity classification and then what happens in IAS 1 with current, non-current. Because it seems to me that at the moment really what we're suffering from fundamentally is that IAS 1 is sort of based on older principles and 32's come along and introduced new ideas of thinking about liabilities and they've sort of got out of sync. And this is just an example of that. And so FICE maybe is a good opportunity to circle back, but in the interim, I'd just do what's simple and go with the staff recommendation.
Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. Just also clarification. As Tom said, based on the exposure draft, actually we also made a change. What's the meaning of the settlement of a liability? So that means that we refer this term not only to the transfer of the cash or other assets, also include transfer those equity instruments. I'm not sure whether it could, you know, it's relevant as Tom was concerned that actually the settlement liability also including that transferred equity instrument, not only you know, as the principle 25A said that outflow of cash and all other economic resources, but actually also including transferring of the equity instrument. So this is first, I just confirm that. Secondly, I agree with your proposal. I think it's clarified a lot. And just to confirm whether my understanding is correct, actually we are trying to narrow down the scope of the paragraph 69D referred to, actually try to narrow down. So this is our intention. Only to refer that paragraph to very limited cases, that is only counterparty conversion option recognized separately from the liability as an equity component. That's proper apply.
It's recommending the narrower of the two ways in which that statement is being interpreted in practice at the moment. So there are two different ways it's being interpreted, and the staff recommendation is for it to have the narrower scope of the two in practice at the moment.
So based on my understanding, based on this narrow version of the clarification, so if we look at back the example one to example four, mm-hmm. So actually only example one, we will require, those entities will classify the liability as non-current.
Yeah.
So actually, example two, three, or four, because all those holder option, they will be recognized as part of the host liability. They will not be recognized separately. And so example three, and also as well as the embankment derivatives, all those will be liability will be classified as current.
Yes.
Yeah.
Example one would be non-current, and all the others would come out as current.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think in the future, if because all those examples are really helpful. So if in the basic conclusion or some area, give the clear answer of because we illustrate those examples, and giving different answers based on different approach in the paper. So afterwards, we made amendment to that, and it's better to give clear answer based on our proposed amendment, which one is the correct answer. Okay.
Daryl.
So I agree with the recommendation of staff. I was also actually quite comfortable with Principle A, and I thought it got me there. So I perhaps just wanted to understand, I'm not sure I'm entirely following the repercussions of what we are, what this change would be. So I'd understood that we were going to go out there and say, look, this is the broad principle, and this is the application of the principle. In terms of rather clarifying, this is what we always meant, how would we go about doing that? What do we mean by that?
Based on Tom's suggestion, when I was thinking about how we would rationalise the recommendation, I wasn't thinking of putting too much emphasis on the principle anyway. And the reason was not because I disagreed with Principle A, but more because I thought this project isn't about principles. This is about clarifying a statement that the board added to IS1 in 2009 that wasn't sufficiently precise. But I could see that there was an underlying principle that you could apply that would help. I think it's helpful if you do have a principle, because if you run up against something, you can then make a judgment based on the principle. And that's why I thought there was a principle that the Principle A could be used, and it might be helpful if it was stated there. Going on from what I hear from other board members, they would prefer not to. I was intending not to make a huge deal of the principle anyway, just say that it could be justified on this principle, but from what some other board members are saying, it might be better not to, given that this isn't really a principle-based clarification. It's based on what's going to be what we've got already and the options available, given what's already in IAS1, which is the better option.
And so we would essentially almost answer it, almost the way Jen Chow was talking, where we would have a very specific requirement with perhaps some examples to illustrate the outcomes of that requirement, not refer to the principle to any great extent, if at all, is where we've landed now. And, I mean, I guess I like the principle, I take Sue's point that we're in the middle of changing potentially quite a lot in this space. These are two standards that are written at different times, and maybe it's easier to go down that route.
The only concern I have about not mentioning any principle at all is if you look at the basis for conclusions in IAS1 at the moment, the basis is very unclear about principles, and we wouldn't be taking an opportunity. Maybe there's a couple of apparently quite contradictory statements in the basis for conclusions. And people, one of the reasons why there is diversity in practice is that some people have been reading one paragraph of the basis, others have been reading another paragraph, and then more people, yet another group, have read neither paragraph. And I think it would be nice to try and reconcile them, and Principle A could be a means of reconciling them. But if it causes more problems than it solves, maybe it's not
clarify.
Worth it.
Principle A is not deciding what is equity and what is liability. It's leaning on other places that have already made that decision, and it's saying just let's be consistent with that.
Run through. Once you've made that classification as liability or equity, you then run it through.
Thank you. This is quite difficult conceptually and practically. 2 points I'd like to make is, first one is, based on the amendment of paragraph 69, we added a kind of a full description of settlement.
Yeah.
In that settlement, we added equity instrument, right?
Yeah.
So it caused this equity investment instrument created some kind of issue. So you are dealing with now that issue. So the first question is, this equity instrument means this is our own equity, and they are classified as equity rather than liability. Is that right?
This would be an obligation to issue the entity's own equity instruments would be treated as settlement. So
yes.
yeah. So basically, that statement is saying that conversion of the liability to equity is settlement for the purposes of classification as current and non-current, which seems to contradict the earlier statement that some conversion isn't settlement. And so it would be clarifying, probably merging these two statements in a single paragraph, explaining the scope of the existing reference to counterparty conversion options, and then saying in all other cases.
So if we accept some kind of accepted practice, yes, the variable number of your own equity is regarded as a kind of a currency. So if you just settle this kind of obligation liability as your own equity variable number, then it's a kind of a, that does fit this kind of description of a settlement, right? Is that my understanding is right?
I think so.
Okay. Then based on that clarification, if we see the example four, mm-hmm, foreign currency convertible bond, in that case, that option of the to convert the, your own equity in terms of a functional currency, mm-hmm, because if that option is denominated as foreign currency, so it's kind of a final settlement of the it will be the variable number of your own, mm-hmm, equity, so that's a kind of a liability. So that's why you are ignoring that option when you classify the financial instrument in example four, right?
Well, we would be saying under this, are you talking, the staff recommendation would be that you would not ignore that option in example four?
In example four, you only ignore equity instruments when they were classified as equity.
Yes.
So if they were classified as liabilities, then you have to consider that option when you classify your host debt country,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
So in the case, by applying that principle, example four, they applied that CB, foreign CB there, foreign exchange CB, then that's a kind of a conclusion. We come to a conclusion this debt contract is a current liability. But what I'm thinking, it's correct, you know, based on your the description of the principle here, mm-hmm, and the principle of amendment, and applying that mechanically in example four, that foreign currency-based convertible bond must be classified as current liabilities. But all of a sudden, the practical meaning of this classification conclusion is, in some, you know, companies, they have issued this foreign currency-based convertible bonds for a long time. That matures 5 years. These companies might think this is a non-current liability. You know, based on basically, they have thought so. You know, this is a non-current liability. But all of a sudden, this kind of interpretation or amendment, they are all must be classified as current liabilities. So I'm worrying about the big impact, mm-hmm, on the practice of this foreign currency-based convertible bond. If this amendment is coming out there, then I guess nobody will issue this foreign currency-based convertible bond, because at any time that can be, you know, settled by your that option. So always this convertible bond should be classified as current liability. So who is going to issue this kind of a financial instrument?
If they are classifying them as non-current at the moment, and it would push it to current just because it's foreign currency.
Yes.
Then there will be practical
implications. Big impact on those instruments of those companies, and also the markets of the. They are dealing with this kind of foreign currency convertible bonds. Mm-hmm. So our amendment, our clarification here, mm-hmm, is quite serious issue. Okay. So, but seems to me, you know, that you clarified the kind of description on that equity instrument in the paragraph 69. Still, I'm not sure whether what you have explained to me is correct interpretation of their settlement of liability.
Right. I think this conversation is a very good example of why I'm keen to just clarify what the board, I think, quite clearly intended when they made the original amendment to 1 to make this distinction between instruments that have got an equity derivative feature in accordance with the classifications requirements in 32 and just to leave everything else, because otherwise we get into quite a difficult conversation about what's in and what's out, which equity settlements do you ignore, which do you include, which would need to have a much more developed concept of what the basis for classification is in IAS-1 than what exists today, which is a much, much bigger project, because you do get sort of odd consequences in terms of whether it's foreign currency denominated or not. We also get into questions of how much should you ignore equity settlement, because then you could have instruments which are settled in 100 currency units worth of ordinary shares, where if you ignore equity settlement, you could have something which is going to mature quite soon, which might not get current classification. I don't think that's right either. So I think what we've got here, even though I think it's not the most pure, perfect, wonderful conceptual approach, it at least is bounded. Well, firstly, it's a clarification of what was already there, so it's inconsistent with the sort of original intent of the project. But secondly, it does at least rely on an existing model which is developed and understood in 32, and it's just relying on that cut. It's not introducing a new notion of how to think about liabilities of different types or different concepts that don't exist in 1 today. So I think it's the most rational approach to deal with it, given the scope of the project. It's a clear cut. And in terms of the explanation, I can see the risks of talking too much about this principle. I think the single most important thing that we need to say somewhere is what's in the first sentence of paragraph 38. This only applies to the derivative components that are separated under 32 and are equity classified. Full stop. I think that's what clarification is needed.
Yep, okay.
Mary?
She thankfully said a lot of what I was going to say, because I think she'd said it more clearly than I would. But I did want to comment about Chung Wu's concern about us making a significant change in practice if we go with the staff recommendation. I was surprised by the feedback you recapped for us from the interpretation committee members about how broadly something that had been an annual improvement, not even a narrow scope amendment, had been taken and applied, and not raised or checked. So I was a bit surprised to see the reports of how much it had been taken as giving exemption from current classification. So I think what we found is there may be a change for some. That does not stop me from saying that we should go ahead and do the clarification. I think if somebody maybe over-applied an AIP, as long as we have a reasonable transition period for the amendment as a whole, we should go ahead and do it. We shouldn't be concerned about how people might have taken this and built things on it in terms of having to grandfather them or anything.
Okay. Can we see who supports the staff recommendation?
13.
Then we go to paper 29B.
Yeah. This paper discusses for the transition and reapplication. Most respondents agree with the proposal to require retrospective application, but some respondents disagree with the analysis. The reason described in the paragraph BC 19. On which initial application of the amendments would be changing accounting estimate rather than the accounting policy. So that regarding the transition, as proposed in the exposure draft, do you agree that both should require entity to apply the amendment retrospectively in accordance with IAS 8?
Do we agree?
question is a first-time adoption. After considering the effect of the amendment, when entity adopts IFRS for the first time, the board concluded that no exemption to this requirement of IFRS 1 would be required. As proposed with the exposure draft, do you agree that the board should provide no exemptions for the first-time adoption?
13.
Our last question is early application. As proposed in the exposure draft, do you agree that both should permit early application and require entities to disclose a fact?
Do we propose application? Yes. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. Goodwill and impairments. Thank you.